This is iFaith Message 101 from Lamentations. The previous four talks were from Jeremiah, which could be considered the before. Jeremiah warns God's people that if they don't repent, the Babylonians will come, they'll capture the city, everything will be destroyed. Lamentations is the after. Because Jeremiah's words were not heeded, that's what happened. And it's probably impossible for us at a distance of 2,500 years plus away from this catastrophe to appreciate how much this hurt the Jewish people. It was totally disorientating. The promise of God that his name would remain with the temple, he would bless them forever, provided that they maintained covenant faithfulness. That promise caused them to assume that the unthinkable would never happen, but the unthinkable did happen. And 587 BC, when the city fell to the Babylonians, everything was destroyed. That's just as catastrophic, just as shocking and disorientating as the fall of the city again in 70 AD when the Romans destroyed the temple, which Jesus prophesied about. So this is a really significant event. The suffering, the pain, which is in every chapter of Lamentations, that could have been prevented if only they listened to Jeremiah's words. Jeremiah advised them to surrender to the Babylonians, to give up, but the king refused. This was avoidable. Like the material in Psalms, Lamentations can be very raw, very hard to listen to, filled with pain, lots of pain. In addition, we know that we're dealing with eyewitness accounts, the descriptions of gauntness, dehydration, malnutrition, and even cannibalism. This isn't just physical suffering that's hard, though. It's a true crisis of faith. Just a couple more introductory comments. Lamentations consists of five poems. Each chapter is a poem, and they draw attention to what has happened. It's like reminding God, letting God know, because they're prayerful, what has happened. It's also a processing of emotion. It's giving voice to confusion. And the first four poems, that is the first four chapters, are acrostics. And an acrostic in the Hebrew Bible is one where each successive line begins with the next letter the syllabary, or we might call it the alphabet. You know, in English, we have A, B, C, D. In Greek, it's alpha, beta, gamma, delta. In Hebrew, it's aleph, bet, gimel, dalet. And so the first line begins with aleph, the second with bet, the third with gimel, and so forth. And so it's don't read too much into it, but it is a way of giving some kind of structure as these verses go from aleph all the way to tav, the last letter. I like the way the Bible Project explains this. It creates a kind of contrast. There's a contrast between the order of the acrostic and the disordered pain and confused grief that people are experiencing. So there's a kind of structure there with what they're doing with the letters, but in people's heart, there's grief, there's pain. The first poem, and I'm going to obviously only be reading very selectively from each chapter, portrays Zion, portrays God's city, Jerusalem, as a woman, and she's suffered trauma, and it's a funeral scene. How deserted lies the city, once so full of people. How like a widow is she who once was great among the nations. She who was a queen among the provinces has now become a slave. Bitterly she weeps at night. Tears are on her cheeks. Is any suffering like my suffering that was inflicted on me, that the Lord brought on me in the day of his fierce anger? From on high he sent fire, sent it down into my bones. He made me desolate, faint all the day long. See, Lord, how distressed I am. I'm in torment within, and in my heart I am disturbed, for I've been most rebellious. Outside the sword bereaves. Inside there's only death. People have heard my groaning, but there's no one to comfort me. So this is Lady Zion suffering extreme trauma. It's a funeral scene. In chapter 2, the second poem. Here, what strikes me is how clearly it's depicted that the Lord has become Zion's enemy. Of course, in the Old Testament, Israel had enemies, But this was not just a matter of preference or like or dislike or getting even. God warns repeatedly that if the Israelites ignore his covenant, then he will become their enemy. And this is exactly what's happened. They've ended up on the wrong side. And so we see in this chapter, not just the Lord's become Zion's enemy, but the punishment and the fall of Jerusalem was justified. They deserved it. It's still painful. I mean, most of the suffering in my life is because of things I've done to myself. It's self-inflicted. Not all, but most of my suffering is, it's me. But it doesn't make it necessarily any less painful. We read, the Lord is like an enemy. He's swallowed up Israel. In his fierce anger, he has spurned both king and priest. And throughout Lamentations, the monarchy and the priesthood and the false prophets are challenged for their failure to do what was right. One of my favorite verses in Lamentations is here in chapter 2. The visions of your prophets were false and worthless. They did not expose your sin to ward off your captivity. The prophecies they gave you were false and misleading. The Lord has done what he planned. He has fulfilled his word, which he decreed long ago. So it's God being fully reasonable. The punishment was just. And here what we read is that the prophets, these false prophets, were misleading the people. If they had been true prophets, they would have exposed sin. It's just like church in our own day. A sermon, worship, the Lord's Supper can be inspiring, can be deeply interesting. But if it doesn't bring us before God in honesty, if there's not an actual, let's say, being real, being genuine in talking about where we are and how we need to change, then it's worthless. It's worthless. What is the sin of so many churches? It's not that what they teach is wrong, although it may be. It's more they're not exposing sin. It's not what they say is necessarily false, but they're not calling God's people to truly follow him. And that's the bad thing about false prophecy. It's not just it's in error. It makes people feel comfortable, smug. Chapter 3, the middle chapter. And this is a longer chapter than the other two. You might wonder, how can it be if every chapter has 22 verses from Aleph, Beth Gimel, all the way to Shin Tov? Well, this is a triple acrostic. So here you've got three verses starting with Aleph and three starting with Bet and so forth. And what's pictured is a lonely man. Remember in chapter 1, it was a widow. It's a Lady Zion. Here, it's a lonely man. He's suffering. And the language comes from, it's the same thought world as Psalms and Job and Isaiah. But it's triple length. It's a triple acrostic. It's drawn out. It's protracted. It's not over quickly. There are some positive words in the middle of the chapter, which many of us will recognize. In fact, for many Christians, they're the only words they recognize from Lamentations. But let me just read selectively. I am the man who has seen affliction by the rod of the Lord's wrath. He has driven me away and made me walk in darkness rather than light. Indeed, he has turned his hand against me again and again all day long. He has made my skin and my flesh grow old, and he has broken my bones. My soul is downcast within me, yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in him. It's the only part of Lamentations where there's this glimmer of hope. In just a few verses, we're reminded that Yahweh is good. He's kind. He's loving. He has loving kindness. He's faithful. And there is a portion. Now, a portion, we normally think of, how many French fries you're getting or how many ounces is that piece of chicken. No, the portion is in the inheritance. And the inheritance is more than just a city, a land, a temple. The Lord himself is our portion. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, what? I will hope in him. That means we need to wait patiently. The inheritance is worth it. Also in this chapter, we continue, the Lord is good to those who hope in him, to the one who seeks him. It is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. So this is the very heart of the message of Lamentations. It's a ray of hope in the midst of an ugly, protracted, unpleasant, painful situation, a situation that's distressing, agonizing, unbearable, in fact, excruciating. Chapter 4 describes the impact of the siege. The Babylonians, of course, are outside and they're starving the city. We read, because of thirst, the infant's tongue sticks to the roof of its mouth. The children beg for bread, but no one gives it to them. Those who once ate delicacies are destitute of the streets. Those brought up in royal purple now lie on ash heaps. Their princes, well, their skin has shriveled on their bones. It's become dry as a stick. Those killed by the sword are better off than those who die of famine. Racked with hunger, they waste away for lack of food from the field. With their own hands, compassionate women have cooked their own children, who became their food when my people were destroyed. These are some of those eyewitness details. Horrible things that often happen in a situation of famine, of starvation. And then in chapter 4, the mood changes. There'll be no more agonizing questions or urgent appeals to God, but rather acceptance of his discipline. But the tragedy is still there. The misery is still there, but now there's more acceptance. And we come to chapter 5, which breaks the order. It's not an acrostic. It's not an acrostic. There's no neat conclusion. Joy is gone from our hearts. Our dancing has turned to mourning. The crown has fallen from our head. Woe to us, for we have sinned. Because of this, our hearts are faint. Because of these things, our eyes grow dim. Why do you always forget us? Why do you forsake us so long? Restore us to yourself, Lord, that we may return. Renew our days as of old. This is chapter 5. So there's no neat conclusion. And I love the way the Bible Project describes this chapter. It's as if the poet, this is the writer of Lamentations, quite possibly Jeremiah, it's as if the poet cannot hold it together anymore, and his grief has exploded back into chaos. Wow, this is intense. I told you. I mean, in the Psalms, some of the Psalms are very heavy, like Psalm 88, but normally the dark Psalms are only dark for part of the Psalm, and then it turns. Lamentations, apart from that little bit in chapter 3, it's just dark. So dark. So how about you? See, Israel was suffering a crisis of faith. Have you ever suffered a crisis of faith? Have you gone through a rough time? Possibly you brought it on yourself. That's what we do. Maybe you're in the middle of a crisis right now. Is your spiritual life messy? Or is it nice and neat, like an acrostic? If you were telling the story, would everything be balanced and all the ends tied up, all the T's crossed, all the I's dotted? Or would there be parts you're not sure you'd be able to tell? Does it feel like it's taking forever to move on, to mature? Feel like it's taking forever for your situation to change? If so, that's all right. Talk about it. Pray about it. Get it out. Be real. It may be painful, but we can be assured that God is fair. God is fair. His steadfast love never ceases. In fact, he is our portion. There is hope. But nothing will happen instantaneously. Presto, no. Therefore, God calls us to wait. But wait on him, wait for him. Ultimately, it's not about the system. It's not about the building, the city, the land. It's not about these things. It's about a relationship with God in heaven. Thank you for listening to this. I hope it wasn't too painful. The next iFaith message is from Jonah, the prophet who ran away from God. Until then, thanks for listening.